Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Quick Slants, the podcast, is presented by Nissan. Go to ChooseNissan.com today for great savings on all of our models. That's ChooseNissan.com.
Today on Quick Slants, the podcast, flying solo because weather has intervened. Doesn't daunt me in the least. Leading off with a little bit of coaching staff chabber, then off-season jabber, then we'll bring Mayo in for the player's perspective on the Super Bowl. What stood out to the former All-Pro?
All that and more on Quick Slants Podcast. Starring me, Tom Curran. How you doing? My guy Ryan Preventure is over here to my right. Ryan and I are flying solo because weather has cropped up here on this particular Tuesday. And as a result, Mayo's like, can't do it. Not coming in. I'm not going to drive in there and then spin around at 4 o'clock in a flipping blizzard and not get home until 9. And you know what? To be candid, because Gerard Mayo recommended to me the book Untethered Soul, I took the blockage that I felt. I took the fear and anxiousness and anxiety that I felt from saying, shit, man, what am I going to do? No Mayo? And I observed it. I didn't react to it. I leaned away from it. And as a result, you have a very serene Tom Curran hosting Quick Slants Podcast solo. And you know what? I also look at it as an opportunity for me to flap gums about a couple of the topics that I wrote about in the last couple of days. And the first thing I want to hit on is the coaching staff. Not only did Brian Flores fly the coop, but he also brought Jerry Schaplinski, who was a very valuable offensive coach with him, former quarterbacks coach. He's going to go to Miami. Josh Boyer, cornerbacks coach, is also lighting out for the territories, as is Chad O'Shea, wide receivers coach. And, Brendan Daly is not going to Miami. He's going to be the defensive line coach in Kansas City. And that one was the eye-widener for people. And they said, boy, is he pissed off? Why is he going? And I think what you have to understand is people can leave for different reasons. You don't necessarily have to be pissed off, but you can be cognizant of the fact that there is not a lot of upward mobility in New England. And that fact is simple and clear. Should Brendan Daly have been considered for defensive coordinator? I'm sure he was. But the shortcoming, and there's nothing he can do about it, he's a terrific defensive line coach, is when you're coaching defense, my understanding is you know, the way the Patriots would perceive it is the best way to be the coordinator is to have experience at all three levels of the defense. Brendan's been primarily and exclusively the defensive line coach. Flores coached linebackers and defensive line and secondary. Excuse me, he did not coach defensive line, linebackers and secondary. So he had that experience when he became the de facto DC last year. So when the opportunity arose and Greg Schiano was out there, they said, let's bring him in. The forte for Bill Belichick as a coach is defensive line, special teams, corners. So whoever they elevate from within their staff or without to do those jobs, Belichick will certainly have a hand in, as he has a hand in with virtually everything defensively. It'll be important to remember, too, though, that the defensive play caller is given the latitude, and we saw that in 2018, to make his own personality or bones and put his stamp on it. And it's too early to talk about what stamp Greg Schiano might be putting on it, because we have a hell of a lot of personnel to wade through in terms of, for instance, I don't want to get too far ahead of myself in talking about the guys who will be coming back, but you know, Jawan Bentley, a Christian Sam, a Duke Dawson, additionally, Trey Flowers, is he back? Are the McCourty twins back? So when does Patrick Chung play? All of those things have to be kicked through, but you know, the personality of the defense from Patricia to Flores to Schiano might not trace a straight line. Also, too, you have to figure in what does the defensive responsibility vis-a-vis the offense have at its disposal. When the Patriots were an ominous offense that could put up 30 at any time, and of course they did do that on several occasions this year, but they were a much more explosive offense. So you saw a much more conservative defense at times. Okay, if we're going to get into a shootout, we're going to play rope-a-dope a little bit defensively because I don't think these guys can score with us. That was the anticipation going into the 2017 Super Bowl, and they could score with them. So offensively, moving away from Greg Schiano and the imprint that he'll eventually put on the defense and you know, the missing guys over there, we'll figure out who the guys who replace it, defensive line and cornerbacks are. But offensively, O'Shea was a hell of a coach. And when you look at the number of wide receivers who cycled through the system, Josh Gordon being a primary one, to see how quickly he assimilated into the system, not just with the help of Brady and the other guys in the wide receiver room, but Chad O'Shea had to be on the hook quite a bit. You see a guy who was really talented and got a lot out of those guys over the course of time. Some guys he got nothing out of. Offensively, Chad O'Shea gone. That leaves a dent at the wide receiver spot. Szczepanski also leaves a dent. Reportedly, Mike Lombardi's son will be brought aboard. He was with the Jets as an assistant quarterbacks coach. He was with the Patriots a few years ago. I'm sure that there's a learning curve there to go from your Christian Hackenbergs and your Darnolds to your Bradys and your Hoyers. So I'm sure he'll be being brought up to speed much more than he'll be bringing them up to speed in many ways. But when you look at that coaching staff and you look at 2019, the tenor that I'm perceiving right now from the Patriots and that I perceived during the week was so much of what happened in the latter half of 2018 created an ability for them to kind of embrace the chaos, embrace the change, and move forward. You know, after that Pittsburgh loss, I spoke to Matt Slater about that loss, talked to Tom Brady about it. You know, number of players cited that there were hard conversations had in that week about who we are going to be and who we have to be. And at that juncture, it seemed as if the Patriots kind of stopped feeling sorry for themselves and said, okay, this is what we're going to be. We're not going to be this explosive team. We're going to do it differently, but we're going to embrace what we have to be. And they did. And as a result, you get a team that goes 11-5 in the regular season, wins, dominates two playoff games, and wins a third with an outstanding defensive performance. And I keep coming back to the way that this team responded to its success, how unified it seemed, how joyful as opposed to joyless it was. And I think that a lot of that did trace back to the idea that, hey, we're overlooked. Nobody thinks we can do it. Let's prove them wrong. Let's be something they don't think we can be. And they went out and they did that. And I think that that ability, I wrote in November after they lost to the Tennessee Titans, when the bye week came, they lost, was it 34-10? It was just an ass booting. And I wrote about the rebooting that would have to happen in 2019 because of perhaps a Gronkowski retirement and Brady at the age that he was and the turmoil from the previous offseason, which they still were working through after Tennessee. Trying to figure out, you know, who are we? What am I? What is this team about? You know, it wasn't really until after Pittsburgh and in the final 5 weeks of the season, I think, that they found their bliss. But now clearly Tom Brady is going to be back. Not only is he going to be back playing football, he's going to be back playing football here. They've got their brain around it. They got their mind around it. Tom Brady is happy with the way things went in 2018 because they realized it was negative energy and counterproductive to the winning. So those questions that I broached when I said the bills are coming due at the end of the season, a couple of big ones have been answered, especially with what you're going to do at quarterback. And I think you were also answered that, what will we look like if we do have to reboot? Well, they got that answer over the last five games of the season, final two regular season game and three playoff games. So now you look at the Gronkowski situation, and I honestly can't fathom which way he's going, just based on the Instagram they put up after the Super Bowl. But if he retires, you look at opportunity and say, okay, well, we're losing a valuable player. We're going to need a kick-ass blocker, and we're also going to need a pass catcher to supplement what Julian Edelman could still do for us at 33. But there are tight ends in the draft. You also look at Chris Hogan, Philip Dorsett. Not to besmirch their efforts, but those aren't what you would call staple players. They're complementary players. So now you have, because they're both free agents, the opportunity to upgrade. Cordarrelle Patterson played at $4.25 million last year. He was a kickoff returner and a gadget offensive guy who really created value, especially when you think of Sony Michel going down and the contributions that Patterson made both against the Bears and against the Packers. Unbelievable job. But again, you look at the scheming and him, his embracing of a role, that McDaniels and Patterson made that happen. So whether he's back or not, I would presume he probably will be, maybe a smaller rate. But you have opportunities at the wideout position to come up with something. And now suddenly there's players who've been untethered. Demaryius Thomas. Texans will be releasing him. The Patriots were interested in him at the trade deadline, even though they did have on their roster Josh Gordon at that time. Will Gordon be back? I don't think the Patriots would say no to his return. However, I think because he's, you know, cost effective, but I don't think that they would look at him as a guy that they would be counting on 100% to make it to February. But you have Demaryius Thomas, Golden Tate also. No intimations that the Philadelphia Eagles are going to re-sign him. So those are two guys the Patriots have either shown or been said to have great interest in. And you have other guys like, you know, Cole Beasley or who's the dude? Jamison Crowder? Redskins, Ryan? Slot dude? All right. Guys like that who could be complimentary players. Danny Amendola. Those are options offensively. But the upshot of what I'm trying to say here is that they enter this offseason with a hell of a lot more optimism about their chances for success because of what happened when they had to change in 2018. The tenor around the team is entirely different. As a source told me, there is zero drama, and that's a big departure from last offseason. And that brings me to the other point that I want to make when you talk about the optimism is this is the other reason for it. You got a crap ton of guys who just served redshirt seasons from the 2018 draft. Started off with Isaiah Wynn. If Trent Brown, left tackle, goes and makes his millions in free agency, which I 1,000% believe that he will, and the Patriots don't match that, which I hesitate to think that they would, well, then you get Isaiah Wynn, first-round pick, you kick him out to left tackle. Now, he's not your 380-pound guy, as Trent Brown was, and he's not 6'7", as both Brown and Nate Solder were. He's 6'2", 315. He's also coming back from an Achilles. So you're going to need other guys as insurance out there. So likely look at bigger guys, other guys who can complement coming in. But, so you have Isaiah Wynn, who's going to be a player of value. Very good player. Duke Dawson, didn't do diddly. Hamstring injury kept him on the shelf throughout, well, really the entire season, because by the time he was reinserted from the IR, everybody else had passed him. Your Keon Crossens, your J.C. Jacksons. So as a result, you have a second-round pick who has an opportunity to get some playing time if there's attrition at that spot. Even more importantly, though, you have fifth-round pick Juwan Bentley, who played three games in that small sample size, was one of the top five rated linebackers in the NFL by Pro Football Focus. That's a guy you can build around and who can be, if he has gone to school on Dante Hightower's approach, can maybe start to spell Hightower a bit if that's what Hightower needs or wants. Because again, he's got a fat cap hit too, but he's also playing at a high level. And he has played at a high level, especially in the postseason. So it's hard to go to Dante Hightower and say, yeah, you've helped us win two Super Bowls. We'd like you to take a pay cut when you know that he's the most important player defensively. He's the nerve center. He's your brain. Okay? So those players are there. Christian Sam is a coverage linebacker. He is going to be coming back from injury. You also have Danny Etling. Don't get excited about him, a quarterback. You got Riley McCarron kicking around. Braxton Berrios was another draft pick last year, Miami wide receiver. Neither he nor McCarron really inspired a lot of confidence in me. And you're like, well, you know, it takes a little time with these guys. No, no, no. Sometimes they jump off the page, as Julian Edelman did in his first year, even having not played the position. In his first camp in 2009, you went, whoa, whoa, whoa. So opportunity knocks, not just with the opportunity to change, but also with the number of guys the Patriots have coming back, and finally with draft choices in 2019. The Patriots will have 12 of them. They already have four in the first three rounds, but by the time the compensatory formula is finished, Nate Solder and Malcolm Butler will be accounted for, and the Patriots are probably going to get two more draft picks in the first three rounds. So they'll have six in the first three rounds. What do you want to do? You want to shoot up, find yourself one of those playmaking safeties, hybrid linebacker guys? Do you want to move up and make sure you get a real good tight end in case you're starting to sweat that somebody might go before 32 who's good? And we'll get into the tight ends talk certainly over the next couple of months. I'm not starting to plunge into that stuff right now, Irv Smith, Alabama. Or do you want to say, hey, you know what, sucker up there, Oakland? How about this? How about I send you these picks late in the first, and I take your first-round pick next year? Next thing you know, you have made a deal with a shit team that might end up in the top five next year. I know the NFL is hard to predict, but you've got yourself in a position where you got yourself into a draft that is quarterback loaded. And you can get your Tom Brady apprentice right there in 2020. Still, he's got to have a contract redone. And the Crafts, as you saw in Boston Sports Tonight and as you heard throughout the week, they're confident it can be done. To my knowledge, no contract talks had been held prior to the Super Bowl. But if they're confident, they must feel good about the fact that Bill Belichick will be signing off on the return. The Patriots that and the folks that I've talked to are speaking as if this is a fait accompli. So that will get done. What the price tag is, what the fallout is, how it hits the cap, we're going to get all through that in the coming weeks. But the bottom line from the Tom Curran soliloquy is the tenor changed over the last 5 weeks. And as a result, this offseason is being embraced. And the change and potential for it is being embraced. Bills are coming due. It's all right. They got that cash to pay them. Coming up in a sec, Gerard Mayo. All right, so after 18 minutes of me, I didn't think I could talk for 18 minutes. I surprised myself. We'll bring in a good friend, Gerard Mayo, Quick Slants podcast co-host. What's up, my friend?
What's going on?
Nothing. Well, plenty, but still, that's irrelevant. The people want to know just a few of the biggest takeaways from the game from a player's perspective from what you saw. What are some of the things that jumped out to you about the Super Bowl, first in terms of the plan, maybe?
Yeah, well, let me start from the Rams' perspective. I mean, I thought it was a brutal offensive game plan. I thought Sean McVay had some brutal calls in the game. You know, you look at that protect the field goal situation. It was third and one. He decides to throw the ball, Goff scrambles out, gets sacked, it becomes, it's like, that is terrible play calling, especially in a low scoring game like that, a tight score, you know, the game was relatively close, you got to take the points. I thought that was brutal. I thought Goff made some terrible decisions. It seemed like he, you know, a lot was predetermined. It seemed like he wasn't really making reads. I'm not sure if you kind of saw the same thing. But that's how I looked at it. And, you know, it was kind of how, you know, from on, you know, looking from the Rams defensive perspective.
Can I ask you one thing on the offense before you go there?
Yeah.
Remember how you've talked about script teams? And I'm not sure if they're a script team or not, but it seemed to me as if they got so many three and outs, the Patriots did, that McVay was never able to get enough intel about what the Patriots were doing. So he kept trying to do the same thing.
Yeah, you know, I kind of agree with that. I'm not sure if they're a script team as well, but at the same time, it's like, listen, if Gurley's not on the injury report, right? Not on the injury report. And he's playing, yeah, a few, you know, that first half. How many runs did he have that first half? It's like three.
Three.
It's like three runs in the first half. And I'm like, that's your bread and butter. I mean, this is a guy who's a strong candidate for Offensive Player of the Year. Now, either someone's lying, which I like to assume, you know, the best, assume positive intent. I don't think anyone's lying on the injury report. Then, I mean, that's just a blatant miss on the coaching staff. That's just how.
How about defensively?
Yeah, so defensively.
Yeah, no, I felt the same way.
Defensively, it's kind of, you know, how we expected Scar and Josh McDaniels to kind of handle those guys up front. Those guys just like to get in the gap and go. Early on, you saw a lot of traps. You saw a lot of James Devlin, you know, smacking down on Sue and Donald. He got killed one time by Sue early on. You knew Sue was going to be geared up, got smacked.
Oh, my God. He was nasty.
He was nasty in the first quarter.
You know. Yeah, he wanted, but he completely had him and Donald both were deciding that they were going to try and just dislocate somebody's arm and beat him over the head with it. But then after that didn't happen, until they couldn't
figure out where the block was coming from. So it's one thing if the guard or the center is going to block you. It's another thing if you have to look at the guard, the center, the tight end, and also the fullback. Right. So now it's like you look at that second half. These guys weren't just slapping, getting in a gap. They were actually looking around to see who's going to block me this play. So, yeah, it was a great game plan. Even early on in that first quarter, I know they didn't pick up a lot of yards. Those speed sweeps that we talked about with Patterson.
Mm-hmm.
Right. That stuff throws off your it just throws your eyes off. It's kind of like a pitcher throwing a change, you know, throwing fastball, or trying to just change the eye level, right? So
right.
He'll throw something just to change. He's not trying to throw a strike. He just wants to throw your eye level off. It's the exact same thing when you're running those speed sweeps. Now guys have to think more laterally and not just slap and rip and get into a gap.
Is that part of what we talk about all the time? And I'm sure it is because we talk about it so much. These quote-unquote do-what-we-do defenses. Yeah, I mean, it's nice that the Seattle Seahawks and the Legion of Boom could do what they do with a cover three. But there are going to be holes to it that if you don't have enough guys or if you can't get there with your linebackers, and I thought the linebackers were a huge liability. Once they got past the defensive line, Mark Barron took an absolute thrashing at the linebacker level from guys like Devlin. So
right.
If you know where everyone's going to be or if you know what it's going to look like if a certain play is run, that's how you end up getting 10 catches for 141 to Edelman when you don't have an offense that's really that talented.
No, I agree. And, you know, I'm not going to sit here and just bash the Rams defense because,
sure,
honestly, they went out there and they played a decent game.
They allowed 13 points. You're right.
Yeah. And you know what? And they look slow in the back end. You know, and they look slow, you know, against the Saints a little bit too. There were some plays there where it's like, wow, they, you know, guys were just running by these guys in the back end. But it just seemed like in the back end, they were moving at a slower speed than everyone else. Mm-hmm. You know, Tlaib included, and that's my guy, but he just looked slow on some of those plays. Like they really didn't know where to go.
What do you think about what the Patriots did? And this is a point I was making at the top. You know, we talked all season long about how crappy it'll be in 2019. Because so many things are going to change and they're going to go through so many alterations to the roster and Dev might be gone and Gronk might be gone and who knows where Tom's head's going to be at. But over the last 5 weeks, the way that this team kind of managed all the change and all the turmoil and came out the other end, I think the whole tenor of this offseason with embracing the change is going to be different. There's a hell of a lot more of a sense of optimism, and that's not just me observing. That's people within the organization saying it. How much does the way a season ends impact the offseason and the next season?
You know, they really didn't, you know, even though they lost the Super Bowl, they really didn't use that chip. You know, when you have success, you win the Super Bowl, you know, the Patriots are used to it. So at the same time, they're like, listen, we need to get back to this point. You know, it all starts with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick saying, listen, guys, all right, last year was last year. We're going to, as soon as we get our rings, we're turning the page and we're on to next year. And it's the same thing after a loss. And that's what kind of makes this team so great, right? It's just being able to change, you know, change the page no matter what it is. Never get too high, never get too low. And this offseason, you're going to hear every single team in the NFL talk about this is their year.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it never gets old.
Right.
You know, even the Cleveland Browns, this is our year to make it to the Super Bowl. And it's like, guys, stop talking about it. Just go back to work and do what you do. Kind of take, I mean, I'm not saying you got to copy the Patriots, but I would, if I'm on another team, I'm taking a page out of the Pats book in that
and don't talk about it. Last question, then we're going to wrap this. We spent a lot of time talking about Malcolm Butler and the decision made to bench him and how that would linger. To me, in the final analysis, that might be the most remarkable aspect of what Bill and the coaching staff was able to do and what the players were able to do, is finally just say, you know what? It's pissed me off. It bothers me. I feel like we had every right to compete in that Super Bowl and should have won it, but it's gone. I'm putting it aside. And we wondered if that could happen. And you, more so, your voice is more important than mine because you played for that team. Does it surprise you when we look at it through that perspective that the Patriots went 11-5, won three games, and won another title?
You know what? Honestly, it really doesn't surprise me. You know, we picked did you pick the Pats every game in the playoffs?
Yes, I barely picked them against San Diego, but after that, I was both feet in.
You know, it got to a point, though, where it's like, all right, it's kind of like when the Giants won their Super Bowl. It's like the Patriots are just playing great football. The defense was cooking. And when you look across the teams and, you know, you look at all the teams that were in the playoffs, the Patriots just showed so many different ways that they could win a football game, right? They could win the tight, close, you know, defensive battle, as you saw in the Super Bowl. They could win the high-scoring, tight games, as you saw with Kansas City. It's just, you know, they just showed so many different ways, and the mental fortitude to get it done it was surprising. I would be lying if I sat here and said, you know what, even though I picked them to win all those games, I still, you know, deep down I was like, man, it's going to be a tough game, especially going out to KC. I was like, this is going to be a tough game.
Yeah, but still, I mean, when you look at the perspective of not just where they were after week 14, but where they were after the Tennessee loss, going into the bye, where they were after week 3, where they were last February after their loss, where they were in April after, you know, Tom sitting there with Oprah and, you know, talking about whether or not he wants to do in the documentary. So many different junctions. They finally said, you know what? Screw it. We're going after it.
Yep, totally.
So, hey, we'll see you next week. Thank you so much, my friend.
No worries.
And you have a good
always
rest of the week.
Always great to catch up. Talk to you guys.
All right. All right, Quick Slants Podcast brought to you by Nissan. Go to choosenissan.com today. Talk to you people next week. Bye.